Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to The Balance, the only sports talk show that gives a well-balanced diet of sports. Host Tom Marquis and the gang are ready to break down this week in sports. This is the one place where fanatics can come together and talk about their favorite teams. The Balance brings you an analytical breakdown of sports from a fan's point of view. So sit back and get ready. It's time for The Balance.
You have stumbled across the number one internet sports talk show on Saturday mornings in the world, as well as our affiliate radio stations and our various different applications that you can listen to us. You, by far, have stumbled upon the best place to talk sports, all sports. We give you a full balance of sports from racing to the NBA, the MLB, hockey, you name it, beer pong, girls. I won't even go there. Hey, you would have to have been part of this morning's show prep. I didn't quite know how to incorporate butch biker girls, mud wrestling, and freshly showered Amish girls. We welcome all of you. So if that's your thing, we'll try to squeeze that in. 917-889-8516 is my digits. Well, we're going to catch up on some NHRA. We've kind of made them the unintentional redheaded stepchild of the show when it comes to racing, and we're going to make up for some lost time with the NHRA. And obviously, as we get geared up for the U.S. Nationals here in Indianapolis, we're going to be spending a lot more time talking NHRA. Of course, the IndyCar out in Texas. Looks like Will Power found some power out there back on the oval. Talk maybe a little bit about that if we have time. And we'll talk a little bit about some NASCAR and as well. And then also our segment, Meet the Makers. Very interesting conversation with them coming up here at 10 o'clock. And then at 10:30. We're going to talk. He's been on the show here before, Power Racer Michael Stokum. I kind of wanted to get him on a little bit earlier, but it just didn't happen. But we're going to talk to him about a very, very scary wreck that he had. And certainly it made national news. And we're going to talk with him about that accident that he had. All right here on The Balance today, Saturday. Don't forget to check us out on our encore show on Indiana Talks from 3 to 5 this afternoon. So if you want to talk live with us, give us a call. Standing by in the wings is Mr. Cliff Tanner of Radio Speed Talk. We're going to take a quick break. When we get back, we're going to talk racing. NHRA, get you all strapped in and ready to go. We'll be right back right here on The Balance on Saturday morning. Over the course of history, there have been many great revolutions. The French Revolution, the American Revolution, the Cuban Revolution, and now in 2012, there's a brand new revolution for the fan. The Fan Revolution, IndyProSports.com. That's IndyProSports.com. Indy Pro Sports is for the serious Indiana fan who roots for the Colts, the Pacers, the Indians, and so much more. Make sure you check out IndyProSports.com. Be a part of the revolution on Twitter, Pro Indy, and on Facebook, Indy Pro Sports.
Fast Lane Cycles Incorporated, located at 100 Gasoline Alley, Suite D in Indianapolis, specializes in quality performance for your bike. A distributor for all major suppliers, we can do everything from service and motor work to customizations and insurance estimates. Give us a call at 317-247-8088. Fast Lane Cycles Incorporated at 317-247-8088.
Hi, I'm Mark Timmons of U.S. Water Systems, a family-owned Indiana company that sells water treatment equipment around the world. But we especially know Indiana water because our world headquarters are right here in Indy. Do you have bad water in your home or business? Whether you're on city or well water, uswatersystems.com makes it easy to solve your water problems. We offer videos, all sorts of water conditioning equipment, and tech support 365 days a year by certified water specialists. U.S. Water has reverse osmosis systems, water softeners, and salt-free water conditioners from $179. Visit us at uswatersystems.com.
He is Twitterless Tom Wolf.
He is Toyota
Kenny Barr.
And that is Snapless Cliff Tanner.
Together, we're the team of Speed Talk. And although our limited social skills may be lacking,
our racing knowledge and opinions are not.
If you want to know about local and national racing, go check us out at RadioSpeedTalk.com.
While you're at it,
catch us on The Balance and other local affiliates.
Speed Talk, where most shows don't even dare to tread.
All right, welcome back to The Balance. My name's Tom Marquis, El Presidente. It's Saturday morning. It's time to talk racing, and joining us, Mr. Cliff Tanner of Radio Speed Talk. Cliff, how you doing, sir?
Man, I'll tell you what, it's been a long week, but it's the weekend, and ain't nothing but racing going on, so I'm happy. I'm ready to go.
Love it. Ain't nothing but racing going on. Hey, you've been clocking some long hours this week, I hear.
Oh my God, man! Way too long, man. No human should have to work that much.
did you tell me? And maybe I misread the text because I was driving at the time. So I try to obey all the traffic laws while driving using my smartphone. But did you tell me that you were working until 2 a.m. one day this week?
Actually, it ended up being about 3:30. So,
was
yeah.
it? Was it at? It was actual work. It wasn't. You weren't out at the local establishment.
No, I was out actually fighting West Nile disease. So
the West Nile. We're going to start. Cliff, the West Nile man. That's West Nile. That's your new nickname. Everybody gets a nickname on this show. West Nile Cliff. Join us now, West Nile Cliff from Radio Speed Talk. Well, we get down to. it's a well-earned nickname. It's hard to come by a nickname on this show. So, you know, hey, we've got a special nickname for your partner there, Kenny Barr. As we were talking some show prep, you know, I don't know if you heard my opening dialogue. Like, I don't know how to include some freshly showered Amish girls or butcher bike babes, but. Maybe we need to come up with a special nickname for him. Well, it's starting early, and it's Saturday morning, and let's try to get back on point. NHRA, you know, unintentionally, obviously by no intention or no fault of ours, it's just been so many. You know, the thing about it is there's so many race series to cover, and it's just hard to cover them all, and you know, IndyCar, we had Indy 500 the month of May, and then we had to catch up with NASCAR. Well, it's time to catch up with NHRA, obviously, as we get geared up for the U.S. Nationals here in Indianapolis. We're going to be spending a lot more time talking about NHRA. And I know NHRA has a story coming out this week in their cooperative venture between NHRA, Funny Car. They come up with a new latch system. And basically, all the NHRA Funny Cars and the Mellow Yellow Drag Racing Series will be required to be equipped with a new NHRA-approved dual front latching and tethering system. Now, this new system, which includes a much-improved dual front latching system as well as a tethering system, will connect to the front latching system to the firewall or driver's compartment. This is an outgrowth of a cooperative effort by NHRA and several other sports top teams and industry leaders. The new latch is thought to be a significant improvement over the latches that were used before. And that was a quote from a recent press release. So let's get into that conversation. We're all about safety. And it sounds to me like this is a very technical thing. And maybe we count on you, West Nile Cliff, to dumb it down for us the best that you can. But talk with us about this new latching system. What does it mean? How did it develop? What's it all about?
Well, basically, it's meant as a safety feature for I guess maybe more the fans, because as you know, we've seen quite a bit where the engine, you know, kind of blows and it takes the whole body off of it and throws it up in the air. And the last one recently came down and hurt a couple of people that, you know, and that kind of, you know, helped speed up the process. But as you said, it was a joint, you know, venture. It was the Vice President of Technical Operations, Glenn Gray, and Engineering Director, Timothy White. But he also had Town Force Racing, Coletta Sports, Head Racing, Don Schumacher Racing, Aerodyne was involved, and chassis builder Murph McKinney was also involved. Those were the big main guys involved in making this decision. But the latch basically is coming down, from what I understand, at a 45-degree angle, and it's a dual latch that goes in the front to keep that thing down if it explodes. And you really have to, from what I understand, you have to pull it back and pull up on it for it to come off. So it's not like the previous latch system where if, you know, the engine combusted, it would just, you know, break loose and let go. And, you know, it's a great move, and NHRA is always behind, and they're always behind getting safety better, but they're always trying to make improvements and things like this. And this one just kind of helped speed up the process, I think, when somebody got hurt. And I think it's going to be great overall, but, you know, my concern would be what happens now if the engine blows and the thing doesn't come off. Is that going to put the driver in any more danger? And, you know, I haven't, you know, read the full report of what's going on. So right off the bat, that's the first thing that came to my mind, is what is this going to do for the driver if, you know, unfortunately an issue like that comes up?
Well, that's a perfect segue to the next question. When we look at what happened just this last year, or was it earlier this year, with Fast Jack Beckman's car? Now, correct me with, am I wrong? His car would fall under that particular new latching system. Am I wrong? Am I right about that?
No, you were right.
So you're right. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, you're right, and that's exactly what it was designed for, to try to keep, you know, again, you know, a lot of people don't understand, when you look at the car, unless you ride up on it, the body of that car is actually like paperweight. I mean, don't get me wrong, when it goes blown up in the air and comes flying down on the ground, I mean, there's some force behind it, but it's, you know, just a light fiberglass, and, you know, again, sometimes when it blows, pieces can go flying out, and unfortunately, the last one that happened, you know, went into a walkway where the fans walk. It just happened a couple of people got hit by that. So yeah, I mean, we've seen some pretty nasty ones. Jack Beckman was one of them, like you said. And he's, you know, we interviewed him, Tom, and he's all for safety.
Oh, yeah. He absolutely is. And I found that maybe irony is not the right word to use, but certainly we had that very conversation about when an accident and when a wreck happens, you know, what do you do? And, you know, one of the things that I know about this new tethering system, I'm like you, Cliff, I have not had a lot of time to research it in. And I'm not a tech guy. And so I don't have all the answers, but I do know that the bodies will not be tethered to the chassis per se, but rather to the body latch, with the goal of keeping the body whole. So,
correct.
Again, if it's going to explode, I guess there's nothing that you could do to keep that from happening anyway. But it could, what you're fearing anyway, is it could provide an obstacle, or at least an additional obstacle, that drivers have to go through to get out of the car in the event of emergency.
Well, and again, you know, I'm not saying that, you know, that is for sure. That's just a thought that popped into my mind. So, you know, I'm not trying to be doom and gloom here or anything like that. But, you know, when you got to do a latch system like that, and you're right, you know, exit is huge. And don't get me wrong. I mean, the the NHRA Safari and the safety crews at every race are very quick. They get over there fast. And, you know, I don't think we'll see anything. But, you know, like I said, that's just one of those things that popped into my head when I read that. So we'll see how it goes. You know, again, it's a you know, good move for Funny Car.
Well, I'm sure that they've put the drivers through a crash course, no pun intended, of learning how to adapt to that. Or maybe it's a system that really the drivers don't know anything about. But you would think, in the event of what you're saying, that they've had some extensive training on what to do on the what-if worst-case scenario. And, you know, obviously they have to train for those things because they have less than a split-second time to make those decisions. So very interesting to see what will happen and what will come with that in the NHRA. Obviously, we'll see the Funny Car in the NHRA here at the U.S. Nationals at Lucas Oil Raceway, and we have all intentions of being there. Hopefully, we have better weather this year than we did last year. We had you talked about doom and gloom.
So.
Talk about doom and gloom last year.
That's
exactly where we were at. Well, let's talk a little bit about the Mellow Yellow Racing Series. It's good to see Mellow Yellow back behind you know, Mellow Yellow. We don't really think about it. We used to put Mellow Yellow in contrast with a lot of other different things. Rock concerts. the Mellow Yellow Monster Band Bash with Metallica.
Yes, well, it is. Nice
I'm dating
see,
myself still... now. Go ahead.
You're all good, man. You know, it's still hard for me to say Mellow Yellow. I still catch myself saying Full Throttle and all that. But you know, it is good to see Mellow Yellow back in the spotlight. And you know, it's been a crazy and interesting year for the NHRA so far. There's some guys that have had some hot runs. That, you know, you look at Pro Stock Motorcycle and you know, the Vance and Hines team isn't as dominating as they were. So there's a lot of good stuff going on, and it's just going to get better. I'm telling you what, man, it's crazy. I watched finally got to watch a whole entire elimination round last week. That's the first time this year I've just been catching, you know, and fast forwarding in certain things. But, you know, they're going to Bristol next weekend, and they got this weekend off, but we're going to see some heavy-duty racing, and it's going to be, I think, we're going to see three of the four coming down to the wire, just like it has been here lately. So, you know, it's always a good time, and when you get down to the Nationals, it's even a better time. It don't rain. But, you know, keep in mind, though, Tom, because of last year in raining, we got a lot of great interviews.
Oh yeah, we did, and we got spoiled. I'm hoping that we'll still be able to get as many great interviews this year as we did last year in the sunshine, mind you, in the sunshine. Well, let's kind of just go through, obviously, the various different the thing about what I like about NHRA is. Okay, you're not a Funny Car fan. Okay, well, maybe you're a different type of, maybe you're a motocross fan or a NHRA motorcycle fan. Still call them motocross, even though it's a completely different race series, but I think you know what I mean. Drag sickles or
pro-stop
motorcycle. There we go, pro-stop. Absolutely. Well, let's just kind of go through here. Obviously, as we look at some of the series that go on inside NHRA, and let's just get everybody up to speed of the NHRA, obviously National Hot Rod Association, and we take for granted that a lot of our listeners are just diehard race fans that know everything about everything. But one thing that we offer to our audience is a little bit of everything. And the thing about it is we may have, for example, the NBA fan listening to us, and that's the casual race fan that knows about the Indianapolis 500 in the NASCAR, but doesn't really understand a lot about a lot of different race series. And maybe sometimes it's good to just kind of give a review of what the NHRA and what is encompassed within the NHRA. So when we look at the NHRA, especially as we get geared geared up and become, you know, in what we call U.S. national mode. We have different modes here in Indianapolis. We got IndyCar mode. We got Brickyard mode, which is coming up next. Then we got U.S. national mode. And then we got the actual motocross MotoGP series mode, which, by the way, you know, I'm all about the funny car. I would do that. But I would not. Yes. Under no circumstances would you find me on a MotoGP going around IMS at 200 miles an hour within inches of the pavement making a turn. It would not happen. You know, here's the thing. I've been saying for a little while here I want to get me a bike again. For the moment I've been prohibited, well, outside of money, but other exterior people say, you're not getting a bike. But Cliff, you know who that person is, but that's either here or there. I'm looking at this new spider thing. I mean, we're getting off topic a little bit, but have you seen this spider? It looks like a giant tricycle, a motorcycle. I mean, it's got the old three-wheelers you used to ride? And, right. But it's actually a full-fledged street-legal motorcycle that's got the big tire in the front and, you know, supposed to keep you from flipping over and all of that stuff. So, you know, the spider. Although, you know, Harleys are still good as well.
I'll tell you what, that bike looks good. I actually looked at one a couple weeks ago thinking, man, you know, it's not that I can't ride a two-wheeler, but, you know, the three-wheeler's safer, especially if you get on impact or something, you know what I'm saying?
Well, I'll tell you one thing, Cliff. If I wanted a bike bad enough, I'd get one, you know. I, the biggest, the lion's share of our audience is male, so I need to make sure that I am not cashing in my man card. If I want a bike, damn it, I'm getting a bike.
I was going to say, you're afraid of losing your man card on that statement?
But anyway, my whole point to tie it all back together, you will not, as much as I like riding bikes, yeah, you would not find me going around IMS at 200 miles an hour around, and it's the road course. Course on top of that, so it's not like it's the typical oval course. So there's a few hairpin turns there that is and you see it every year, and we'll talk more about it as we get closer to the MotoGP. But there is no way they live life on the edge, and that's great. You know, speaking of other race series, Connor Daly also enjoys as a hobby doing MotoGP. So, I don't know, he's probably going to be running into some contract issues that says, you can't do that anymore. We don't want you doing that as a hobby. But, yeah, he was talking about that. Well, let's get back on topic with the NHRA. Let's talk a little bit about what encompasses the NHRA. There's really, the NHRA, the National Hot Rod Association, is made up of various different race series, Cliff. So talk with us a little bit about that and give us a quick education, NHRA 101, if you will.
Well, basically, the NHRA, the top division, now they've got, you know, different divisions, and they got feeder systems just like everybody else does nowadays. But, you know, it's made up of four divisions. It's Top Fuel, Funny Car, Pro Stock, and Pro Stock Motorcycle. They're all dragsters. They go straight, you know. I will tell you this. If you've never been to an NHRA event, you got to go. I guarantee it. I've taken several people to these things, and every one of them's turned into a dragster or an NHRA fan. And you know, I always followed it but never really got into it, but since we got on the show and started doing NHRA, it's great. But the Top Fuel, if you want to know what they are, essentially those are the ones that go the fastest, obviously. They also are the long elongated ones with the small tires on the end. Those do tend to go the fastest. You got the Funny Car, which we've been talking about, with the latches and all of that. Those are the second fastest. Pro stock cars and pro stock motorcycles are basically, you know, the slower of them, the motorcycle being the slowest. Well, so far anyway, although I got to tell you, I was kind of surprised Eddie Krawiec in practice down at Bristol hit 200 miles an hour. They finally hit 200 miles an hour. The pro stock, 200 miles an hour on them. You know, they've gotten up to 199. But he actually went at almost a 201. But he also – go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry, Cliff. I was just going to ask you, who did you say hit that?
Eddie Krawiec. He is a Baptist, but he also said that, you know, the weather was just right and all of that was able to get him to better traction and all that. But you probably, I don't know if we'll ever see that in a race mode, but, you know, again, you never know. You get the right conditions with the track and the weather. And, man, I'm telling you, man, 200 miles an hour in a quarter mile or so, you know, that's what I want to do. You know, I talked about that last year, and I tried to get Craywink and his buddy Andrew Hines to let me get on one of them.
Uh-huh.
You know how that
goes. You did. Absolutely. They got to have more lawyers involved, I guess. Hey, there's a couple radio guys out there want to go for a spin. What do you think?
Just once, maybe by last. What the hell?
That's right. I'm going out. Yeah, I'm going out in glory. Absolutely. Well, we got the top fuel funny car Pro Stock and Pro Stock Motorcycle series. Obviously, four series encompassed in the main NHRA. As you said, they do have feeder systems and so forth as well. So let's talk a little bit. Let's get familiar with some of the drivers in the top fuel series as we get geared up to talk more and more about the NHRA, especially as we get geared up and draw closer to the U.S. Nationals here in Indianapolis. So, you know, there's one guy in the top fuel that I just say he has, for lack of better reasons, he has a IndyCar name because I cannot pronounce it, but Khalid Abolushi.
Abolushi.
Babalushi. Babalushi. You know.
Abba. Not Baba. Abba.
Abolushi.
Abolushi, yes.
Outside of not being able to pronounce his name, he is, in my opinion, can get out there and really he knows a lot about the top fuel, and he is certainly one to watch. And to be quite frankly, he ain't scared.
No. When he first came up, he had some steering problems. It looks like he acted like he was scared, but this year, he has lit it up. We had an all-final with him and his partner. Man, my mind just went blank. What's the foreign guy's name? The foreign racing.
What's the foreign racing's name? Huh? Let me think about that.
No. Not the name. The owner of the racing group. But for some reason, my mind just went blank. But
oh,
anyway.
I know what you're talking about. I'll have our station get on that for you. Find us the racing team. Oh, go ahead, buddy.
Come on, man. You know, you make a mistake. We're supposed to live with it. I make a mistake and I get drilled. What's the deal here?
Hey, man, I get drilled too. You feel free to drill me anytime, and I mean that in the completely non-gay sort of way. So
I'm with you, man. Anyway, sit on top. Buddy. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. Go ahead. Go ahead. I interrupted you on my little Saturday morning jabbing, but go ahead, sir.
That's all right. I'm used to it, man. You know, I've got big, broad shoulders in it. So, but anyway, sitting on top of the standing so far is Sean Langdon, which, you know, he's been having some issues in the past, but he's putting it together. Usually you see Don Schumacher Racing with obviously Tony Schumacher, Antoine Brown, Spencer Bracey are always, it seems like, in the top spot. But right now, Sean Langdon is in the top spot, albeit only 4 points over Tony Schumacher and Antoine Brown, Spencer Bracey, and Khalid Abolushi is in the number five. Doug Coletta, Brandon Bernstein, Morgan Lucas, Bob Vandergriff Jr., and Clay Milliken round out the top ten. Brittany Force has started winning some of her rounds. So she's coming through. She sits down at 13th, but she needs to get moving. And Leah Pruitt, is also sitting right behind her at about 60 points out. So they're going to have to get moving if they want to make the top 10. But I think we're going to see maybe see a dethroning of a Don Schumacher Racing this year. There's a lot of good guys just popping out of nowhere. Coletta's had some good runs. Bernstein's had some good runs. Schumacher, Antoine Brown. Isn't as dominating this year as he was last year, but you know, you can't never rule him out because he's 120 points out. So that's a kind of a look at your top fuel right now.
Well, absolutely, Ed. I enjoy watching the top fuel because they go fast. They go real fast. Yeah, and you know, one of my favorite drivers in the NHRA is actually Brittany Force, but then there's Courtney Force, which is in the funny car. But that's if it's a girl and they got the last name Force, I'm all for it.
How could you not be? It's a force.
May the force be with you. You know, we joke around about that. Obviously, you know, I was a little starstruck when I had the opportunity to meet Courtney and talk with her. But what a great young driver she is. And you know, the thing about it is, and she'll be her and her sister, and not even just her, Leah Pruitt also will be the first ones to tell you, don't compare me to Danica Patrick. Because I mean, it just happens by nature, but I don't understand that. Maybe it's because they're pretty attractive women, but you don't see that comparison. In all reality, you don't see the comparison between Anna Simona and Danica, but you do see the comparison between Leah, Brittany, and Courtney to Danica in various different things, and they'll be the first ones to tell you that don't make that comparison. We are race car drivers first and foremost. We just happen to be born to woman. We're just women, and that right. They are, sir. So I'm just wondering why we draw that comparison line between Danica and, for example, Courtney or Brittany Force, but we don't draw that line between Simona and Anna, for example.
Well, I mean, let's face it. You know, it's the reality is the world is what it is. Okay, you have people that, you know, the attractiveness is what it's all about. Not that Simona's not, but she doesn't have the charisma as some of these other people do. And you know, the difference between all of them, even Simona, is they know how to drive. Where Danica is still, you know, she's got to find her way.
Right.
And I don't mean to be slamming her in a bad way, but you know, let's face it, if she wasn't on GoDaddy and she didn't have the modeling career prior to and all that, would Danica be as famous as she is today? I don't know. You know what I'm saying? Because, you know, some of these girls, or ladies, I should say, in other racing things, I think make Danica Patrick average when it comes to looks. So it's sad that it's done, and I don't blame them, especially with Courtney Force, because she proves she can win. You know, and I wouldn't want to be compared to that either because, you know, in NHRA, these ladies are focused on racing, they're focused on winning, and they don't care about all the other stuff. So, you know, and that's a cool thing.
Right, absolutely. I love the Force family. I love the charisma that they have. You mentioned that's a good word for the Force family because they come about it naturally, and obviously John Force, legend in the NHRA series, I'm not trying to jinx him in any way, but I know he's stepping back, but he'll die a race car driver, and in some capacity or another, and so they come about it great names, and which brings us to the next series, a funny car. I like funny car, and they're just fun guys, and you know we talk about Fast Jack Beckman, we talk again about Courtney Force, and another female, Alexis DeJora. Of course, nobody's making that comparison to Danica to her. She kind of scares me, but didn't she just recently get married to the guy that
the motorcycle dude?
No, she got married to. It's going to come back to me. She got married to Jesse James. Didn't she just get married to Jesse James? Yeah, well, you said motorcycle dude.
I don't know about that.
I was thinking racing, but she just recently got married to him. So more power to her. Yeah, I wouldn't want to tell her, are you just like Danica or what?
Well, she has tattoos. Danica doesn't. Well, at least that we know of. But anyway, you got me way off track on that one.
We're way off track. We're it's Saturday. It's Saturday morning. It's the balance. We have to get way off track. And you know, here's the thing. You know, we talk about Danica. And
her ass is so hot. I've seen it cause traffic accidents.
There's more female drivers. Maybe it's just because John Force only breeds women. But there's more female drivers in the NHRA than there are any other race series, at least to my knowledge. What do you think contributes to that?
Well, I mean, let's face it, probably the biggest thing was Shirley Muldowney. I mean, she broke it open. I mean, there were other women that tried in the past. But, you know, it's a sport that I think that women can break into racing a lot easier, if that makes any sense. You know, because the NHRA is so diverse and so open to, you know, finding future stars no matter what, where you see, you know, something like the NASCARs and something like that, whether – you know, they'll tell you they're diversified and everything, and they are to a point, but it's still the good old boy network. You know what I'm saying? So I think, you know, the money and the appeal for females is a lot bigger in NHRA if they like the race. And, you know, I've interviewed, you know, some of the lower classes. I interviewed an 18-year-old girl that does the lower classes. She just graduated up, and they just love the racing. And she said it's easier to break into than other types of racing, and that's why she does it. So I think that has a big bearing on why we see more females in NHRA than any other sports series, racing series. Just
all right, we're talking to West Nile Cliff Tanner, Radio Speed Talk. Man, you got it now, brother. It's stuck on you. Stuck on you. And I kind of like it, man. Wear it with pride. West Nile Cliff Tanner. We'll be right back. We've got to take a break. We're going to get back. We're going to break down some more of the series here, some funny car series, and talk about some of the point standings in NHRA. Also, want to talk a little bit about the World of Outlaws coming to Kokomo. We'll be right back right here on the Balance Radio Network.
Hi, I'm Mark Timmons of U.S. Water Systems, a family-owned Indiana company that sells water treatment equipment around the world. But we especially know Indiana water because our world headquarters are right here in Indy. Do you have bad water in your home or business? Whether you're on city or well water, uswatersystems.com makes it easy to solve your water problems. We offer videos, all sorts of water conditioning equipment, and tech support 365 days a year by certified water specialists. U.S. Water has reverse osmosis systems, water softeners, and salt-free water conditioners from $179. Visit us at uswatersystems.com.
Speed Talk is a show about racing, both national and local.
We also give our opinions and thoughts on the happenings of the week.
On top of that, we also include interviews from all tiers of racing.
And don't forget the segment Do You Know, which gives you more knowledge than you can handle.
Really, Kenny? More knowledge than we can handle?
Join Tom, Kenny, and me, Cliff, weekly on Speed Talk as we give you the lowdown on the racing world.
Catch us on The Balance and other affiliates weekly.
Don't forget to visit us at RadioSpeedTalk.com.
Speed Talk, the racing show you won't soon forget.
Head in the game, head in the game.
My name is Turbo. I just wanted to go a little faster.
Yes! 17 minutes! That's a new record!
Let's go, people! Pick it up!
Put all that racing nonsense behind you and start living your life.
I have a life?
I wish I was fast.
Oh, no. What's happened to me?
Second.
Are you kidding?
I'm never going slow again.
This must be my lucky day.
A little far from home, aren't you? Garden snail.
You clearly got the skills to pay the bills. If snails had to pay bills, that is. I'm Whiplash. This is my crew.
I'm fast, like a shadow.
But shadows, they're not inherently fast.
What shadow?
I can still see you.
With my brains and your speed, we should be destined for greatness.
The Indy 500.
This is ridiculous.
A snail cannot race in a competition meant for cars.
Wow. Aren't you just a little ray of sunshine? All of these people, they believe in me.
Those guys are crazy.
Those guys are awesome.
I'm moving so fast, the whole world's going in slow motion, baby.
Whoa. If you think that's something, check this out.
Hey, you a robot?
Are you radioactive, homie?
Ooh, that's a new one.
Welcome back to the balance. We're just going in full nitro action right now with Mr. West Nile Cliff Tanner of Radio Sweet Talk. I love it, man. It's yours, brother. Own it. Live it with pride. Hey, you know what? Speaking of living it with pride, you know, I have the best behind-the-scenes crew here at the Balance Radio Network. We did some research during the break. And we're going to put this up, and I'll make sure it gets emailed over to you. But apparently, Danica does have a tattoo. A little bit of what we call a tramp stamp. Danica has a tramp stamp. At least she salute the troops. We're going to give her credit. It's an American flag encompassed and surrounded by angel wings with some very big stars there. So Danica has a tramp stamp.
Wow.
There you go. Question solved. Danica Patrick has a tattoo. And, thanks to the paparazzi, when she was on vacation out in Maui last month, the proof was there. The proof was on the back, brother. Danica has a tramp stamp, but at least she's supporting and saluting the troops as well. So we're going to put that up on our social media, and I'll make sure that gets emailed over to you.
Oh,
the
no,
link
please.
To that.
That goes under who gives a crap.
Well, hey, you proposed the question, man. I wanted to make sure that the question got answered. So It is true. So, all right, let's get back on topic. NHRA Funny Car Series. Some of the best drivers in racing are inside Funny Car in the NHRA. We look at Fast Jack Beckman, Courtney Force, and some of the young drivers. Blake Alexander, talked about him on the show before. Josh Crawford, and of course, Mr. Ron Capps. Talk with me a little bit about the Funny Car Series, what it is, and maybe some of the standout drivers you've seen this year in the NHRA Funny Car Series.
Well, I'll tell you what, it's nice to see Matt Hagen back on track. He won the championship 2 years ago. Great guy. Johnny Gray coming out of nowhere, sitting down in second. Cruz Pendergrat he has caught fire this year. He's been down a few times, and he's only 50 out. And then, of course, you got Ron Capps sitting there right behind him, Jack Beckman, Tim Wilkerson, Courtney Force, Robert Hive, 7 and 8, Worsham, Dale Worsham, who is actually kind of funny how his career went, but he raced the top fuel for so long, won the championship, retired on the championship, became true crew chief for Alex Azuria, and then he got a ride here in Funny Car this year, and he's starting to put it together and come up out of there, and John Force sits down at 10th. You look at Bob Tasker III, who's sitting right outside. So we're going to see a huge shootout to get down to the countdown for these guys to see who the top 10 is going to be because, you know, there's some guys putting some stuff together. Again, Matt Hagen had an all-final with Jack Beckman this last week, and he barely edged out Beckman. So, and, of course, you know, obviously they're teammates. So, the Funny Car Division, historically the last 3 years, has come right down to less than 50 points and on the last weekend. So I have no doubt that's going to happen again. And as you know, you know, in the NHRA, or if you don't know, a lot of times there's streaks. You put together a streak at the right time in the NHRA, and you're sitting on top of the standings in no time. But Matt Hagan, Johnny Gray right there, I'm telling you, Johnny Gray is having a great year, and his son racing down in the pro stock, I believe. So, you know, again, it's going to be a heck of a shootout. And Courtney is kind of went down a little bit. The forces went down a little bit. Courtney started off pretty hot. So you can't never count her out, man, because she can win in a heartbeat.
Right, absolutely. And I always thought that it was an interesting interesting, and to my knowledge, I don't know that I've seen father sons, but I don't think that we've ever, and I could be wrong about this, but we'd have to dig deep to find this, but I don't think we've ever seen a father-daughter race against each other in the same series.
We have. I mean, you know, John and Brittany have raced each other before.
Well, okay,
Courtney,
outside of the Force family, I apologize, family. I apologize. I did not make that distinction. You are right. But, I mean, outside of the forces, I mean, that's the only time we've ever seen that, I guess, is what I'm saying.
Well, actually, we haven't. Well, with daughters, yes. But, you know, we got the Hirana boys, don't forget, down there, Pro Stock Motorcycle. But in Funny Car, I'm not sure if we ever have or not. I don't. You know, I honestly can't tell you that. I would have to do some research on that, just like you. So
interesting trivia. Well, as we move on to Pro Stock and Pro Stock Motorcycle, I'm going to combine those two, and I know they really aren't the same, but just for purposes of time, because I do want to move over to the World of Outlaws. I want to take some time to talk about the World of Outlaws. Obviously, the Outlaws are coming to Indiana and to Kokomo. I want to talk a little bit about that race and certainly about the World of Outlaws series. So we look at the Pro Stock and the Pro Stock Motorcycle series inside the NHRA. Talk with us a little bit about that briefly, Cliff.
All right, Pro Stock car, you're going to be looking at Mike Edwards, Jed Coughlin, Alan Johnson, Erica Ender-Stevens, and Jason Lyon, Vincent Nobile, your top six. Jason Lyon and Vincent Nobile are starting to catch a little bit of fire, and they're coming up real quick there. You can't ever, you know, count out Greg Anderson either. So, you know, and Vincent Gaines is all there. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens here. It'll always be a shootout. It'll be interesting to see if Erica can catch fire and move up through the ranks like she did last year. I'm kind of hoping to see that.
Absolutely, and I apologize. We were in a big conversation about female drivers earlier. I don't know how that name actually slipped my mind momentarily, because we had an opportunity to meet her and talk with her, and that was when she was still Erica Anders, but now she's Erica Anders hyphen Stevens. Great driver. Another a legendary female driver, and certainly making a name for herself as well in the Pro Stock series.
Yeah, she had a wonderful year last year until the end. It seemed like she ran into a little bit of bad luck from the U.S. Nationals down there in Indy on through, but she still finished in the top five. So, I think there was at one point she won four out of six races last year. So, yeah, she's going to be a force up there, and, you know, I love her attitude towards racing, and you're right, she's pretty good at it. So, flipping over to the Pro Motorcycles, Hector Arano Jr. sitting up at the top. Our boys from Vance and Hines, Eddie Krawiec, is sitting down at 6, and Andrew Hines is down at 11. But we got Scott Polacek, Hector Arano, Michael Ray Jr., John Hall are your top five. For some reason, it doesn't seem like the Harleys are doing too well, although, like, you know, as we talked earlier, Eddie Krawiec hit 200 miles an hour practice down there. So, you know, they'd be coming around. But Hector Arana moving up. Apparently there was a little bit of a scuffle last week in the pits between Hector Arana's crew and I think it was Matt Smith's crew sitting down at 7th. They never did go into it too much, but I understand, and they ended up facing each other in the semifinals. And Hector Arana Sr., actually made it to the finals of beating, but unfortunately he lost in a very tight race.
Right, absolutely. Now, any other real quick thoughts that you have on NHRA this season as we get geared up to focus more on NHRA as we head toward the Grand U.S. Nationals?
And I'm telling you what, hold on to your hat, folks, and the seat of your pants, because this is going to be, you know, we're getting down to the time where they're going to be pushing for the countdown, and, of course, the last race before the countdown is the U.S. Nationals down in Indy, If you've never been to one, you have to go. I'm telling you, man, it's one of the greatest things you can see. Get that power behind you. You get the nitro measles if you stand close enough. And man, it's just a fun time.
Oh, absolutely. You know, we took Michelle Jones, our social media director and producer, out there with us. And, you know, that sky stand they have above the drag strip, it shakes and it wobbles.
Yes.
And she's like, I got to get off of here. This is scary stuff. So, yeah, absolutely. If you want to feel your heart beat inside your rib cage, get out there to Lucas Oil Raceway. Well, I tell you what, the World of Outlaws. You know, and I have a tendency to get my dates mixed up because I'm used to everybody racing on the weekend. They actually race on the 5th. I think they might, and Cliff, you might correct me on this if I'm wrong, but the World of Outlaws STP Series was out at Kokomo on the 5th, but I think they go through the rest of the weekend. Aren't they there all weekend?
You know, I'm not 100% sure on that. I'm trying to look that up as we talk here. But, yeah, they were out there on Wednesday and put on a heck of a show. There was four lead changes through that whole race. But Tim Kading won the race. He ended up, I think the last 10 laps, I think he took over and just kind of ran away from the field. But the World Outlaws always puts on a good show. You know, if you ever get a chance to go out and check, you know, check them out, check them out.
Well, and here's the thing. The STP World of Outlaws Sprint Car Series, obviously the premier winged Sprint Car Series, race on dirt. They call it the best show on dirt. And if you've never been exposed to dirt track racing, I would tell you that the World of Outlaws is a good opportunity to do that. And if you like excitement, it's a little bit different crowd, a little bit different atmosphere, if you will, to say the least. And for the most part, most of those guys say NASCAR's not real racing anyway, or IndyCar's not. I mean, they're a different breed of fan, but you know what? They're your neighbors. They're your guys. They're your local track. And I think that's one of the things that we try to encourage. That's why also I wanted to, and we've got away from it over the last couple of weeks because of all of our busy schedule, but I wanted to feature Kokomo Speedway as our local track here in Indiana, just right up the road here from right up 31 here from Indianapolis, a little bit south of you. Great track, Kokomo Raceway, obviously the World of Outlaws, the STP Series out there this week. So talk with me, Cliff, a little bit about the Kokomo track, dirt track racing in general, and the World of Outlaws.
Well, I don't know where you want me to start. And to answer your question, it does not look like they are
there
through the weekend.
Kansas.
It was just on
there. Yeah, they're in Kansas right now. And so that's my fault. But still get out there to Kokomo and check out some dirt track racing. Go ahead, Cliff. I did not mean to interrupt you there.
No. You're good. Again, Kokomo track. And unfortunately, that is one of the tracks that is on my list to hit this week. this year. I have not been up there yet, but I understand they put on a heck of a show. They've got the USAC Sprints and everybody up there next week. So, you know, if you get a chance, go check it out. That's all I can tell you because I've never actually been to the track. So.
Well, Cliff, let's just take that a little bit further, and we're featuring Kokomo Speedway. We'll get that up on our social media for those of you that want to check out Kokomo. If you've never been to a dirt track, Kokomo really is the place to go and get introduced to dirt track racing. You and Kenny and Radio Speed Talk, you guys are big dirt track guys anyway. In fact, you are leading a campaign to get NASCAR back on dirt, and I know they actually consulted with you, and you and Tony y'all got together and got it the trucks out there in Eldora. I find it funny, right after we came on the show here and we said, hey, we're going to launch a campaign to get NASCAR back on dirt. It wasn't long after that we see that the NASCAR trucks ending up at Eldora. Dirt is a lot of people like maybe want to separate themselves from dirt just by human nature. But there's just something really, I'll use the word awesome, to watch dirt track racing. Talk with us about the love that for dirt track racing and what that really is.
Well, you know, it's racing on dirt. I mean, you know, I mean, it's if you've never been to one, Well, now, hold on. So, calm down. It's, you know, it's racing on dirt, not asphalt, right? Hello?
I'm here. Are you there?
Okay, sorry. Yeah, I'm here.
I think that was on your end. It wasn't on my end. Go ahead, sir.
Okay. Hey, no problem. I just thought I lost you there. But
not at all, bud.
There's something special about dirt track racing. You know, when you watch a race on asphalt, it's always going around. Yes, you make left-hand turns. You do the same thing on dirt. The biggest difference is a lot of times you'll see the sliding, the turning. It takes a lot more muscle and a lot more endurance to race on dirt. And just being there is just awesome. I got a chance to go to Eldora for the first time last year and Kokomo. Like I said, I haven't been there yet, but dirt is dirt. Doesn't matter where you race. I've been to one in Clarksville, Tennessee. I've been, you know, to several other dirt tracks. And it's just awesome to watch the racing on dirt and watching how good those guys are. If you've never seen it on TV or you've never been to one, you need to check it out sometime, because the skill of those guys coming out of the corners, a lot of times they're sliding sideways and getting right. I literally stood down there in Eldora by the wall, and Justin Allgaier, got within an inch of that wall every time he came out of turn four going into the front stretch. And I'm telling you what, man, just watch dirt racing. It's just exciting as heck. And I'm glad to see that NASCAR went there with the truck series, and I would love to see the top series go in there. I mean, come on, if you're going to do road races, you're going to do super speedways, you're going to do short tracks, why not make one of your short tracks or add a short track in there and put it on dirt? The fans would love that. Yes, it's going to be a little more expensive because you got to have a car set up for it. But I'm telling you what, that place would sell out for 3 or 4 years in a row at least, because there are a lot of dirt fans around here. And there's a lot of them around the Midwest. We don't realize that Kokomo is one of them. And you can go to kokomospeedway.net and get all the information out there and go check it out. It's, you know, like I said, they've got USAC Midget Sprint Cars and Thunderstocks coming up next weekend on Father's Day on Sunday. So go check it out.
Well, absolutely. It is Father's Day on Sunday, and happy Father's Day to all the fathers out there, to you, Cliff, as well as all the other fathers. And also, you know, real quickly, and I do want to touch on a couple other race series, and then we'll let you go. I wanted to take time to recognize all the World War II veterans, especially in recognition of D-Day. And, you know, unfortunately, that's a generation that's gone by, and a lot of times your chances of being able to talk to somebody who actually was at D-Day is getting slimmer and slimmer. So if you see a World War II vet, most times you know who they are. They have no problem wearing their caps and so forth. They don't want any special attention. But I tell you what, they really do appreciate you coming up to them and saying, hey, thanks for what you did in World War II. So all of our World War II vets, we salute you. And, of course, we remember D-Day this week. Well, NASCAR
– if you don't mind, I want to touch on that real quick.
No, absolutely, buddy. Take your time. Go ahead.
I want people to understand that D-Day was the worst casualty, one of the worst casualties. I was lucky. I was able to talk to two veterans from that day. And one of them is actually in the NASCAR Hall of Fame. So – Bud Moore, I've interviewed him twice, and both times he talked to us about D-Day and what a nightmare that was. I mean, people were literally, you know, just tore up, and they drowned from the weight of their own backpacks. And you know what? If you don't appreciate what happened that day, you're not American. That's the bottom line.
Absolutely. And you know, my grandfather was a World War II vet, and he has passed on now. Certainly one of the closest men in my life. And I remember he wouldn't talk about it too much, but from time to time. And he also fought in both theaters, the German theater and the Pacific theater. And you know, not to take away from any of our current veterans, and obviously those that know our show, my son's a Marine, not to take away from the current wars that we've done, but there's just something special about taking some time to sit down and talk to one of those World War II veterans. It still pulls at the heartstrings, if you know what I mean, Cliff. So absolutely, if you don't understand how important a World War II vet is, I just suggest that you grow up and understand what that's all about. All right, let's move on. IndyCar out there in Texas. It's kind of hard to transition from that, if you know what I mean.
Exactly.
But fast, 550, fast race setup. And so this is going to be a huge race out of Texas as we have the 550, which is going to be a fast race, and they do everything big in Texas, and this is no exception.
Yeah, it's always a great race, lots of speed. Will Power, as you said earlier, found the power, and he took the pole with Marco Andretti sitting second. And, you know, Marco's on a mission this year to get the title. Will Power really needs this race to get himself going because he's running into some bad luck and some bad driving. Matter of fact, I saw he also got fined for last week. He threw his gloves at Savada, was it?
But funny thing is, I watched that, and then I saw his tweet. He sent out a tweet. I don't know if you're not following him on Twitter, you probably didn't see it. But there was a picture of him with one of the IndyCar track officials handing him back his gloves. He said, "Come on, people, it wasn't as bad as you seem." I loved what he said on Mike right after the right after that little pile up there. He's like, "Well, he went from champ to chump." in his willpower accent.
Well,
go ahead.
That's definitely in the street accent, but willpower, I think, it's getting to him because he's had some bad luck. I mean, we saw our buddy J.R. Hildebrand, who got let go, actually run over him because it looked like Hildebrand was making a tweet while he was driving in that race over there. But he's just had some bad luck, and he needs this. And, 2 years in a row, he fought for the championship and lost it on the last day. And, you know, I don't care who you are. If that don't mess with your mind, you're not human. So he needs this race, and if he does well here, I think he's just going to get better. Dario Franchitti also needs to find something, and he qualified for, so it'll be interesting. But our buddy Joseph Newgarden, man, I'm telling you what, that kid is impressing me more and more every week. He starts seventh.
Well, absolutely, and I wish we had more time to talk to Mandy Carr, obviously one of our favorite subjects to talk about. But we don't. Night race tonight out in Texas. It's always fun to watch IndyCars at night, especially on an oval. So it'll be a fast race at night tonight at 8:30. So yeah, plenty of, I'm making ribs today, Cliff. So I gotta get those started, man. Hey, you're more than welcome. You can make the 2.5 hour drive down here, brother. I'll make you up a slab, brother. It'll be worth the drive. Any thoughts on NASCAR this week or last week that you want to throw out there before we go? Because we are running out of time, sir.
We'll just say real quick, kudos goes out to Juan Pablo Montoya for baiting Jimmy Johnson and watching make a butt out of himself and got black flagged. And a great win for Tony Stewart, man. God, he came out of nowhere. And hopefully that's the boost he needs. So look out for Tony Stewart coming through. Qualifying got rained out in Pocono this week. But, so they're going they're going according to points. So Jimmy Johnson, trips over and gets into the pole winner. So.
All right. West Nile, Cliff Channer of Radio Speed Talk. So glad you could take some time for us today. Obviously, you can hear Radio Speed Talk tomorrow afternoon right here on the Balance Radio Network. And so what's going on Speed Talk this week? What you guys talking about?
Yeah, we're talking a little bit about NASCAR. We're talking a little bit of everything. But the biggest thing is we got to talk to our good buddy Roger Curtis from Michigan International Speedway, which will be next weekend.
Absolutely, and I wish that I could make that trip, but this year is not going to happen, and I am working on having Roger on the show next week. So hopefully we'll be able to have him on the show here with us, so you'll be able to talk with him again. I like Roger, good guy, and he certainly represents the Michigan International Speedway with class. And if you've not had an opportunity to get up there to that track, it's a fun track, it's a fun city, it's a fun area, and deal with the traffic a little bit, but other than that, it's fun. So,
yes,
all
it
right.
is. It's a great time.
All right, Mr. West Nile Cliff. I'm going to put that up on our Twitter. You just change your Twitter from Radio Speed Talk 2 to West Nile Cliff, at West Nile Cliff. Hashtag West Nile Cliff. All right, my friend, you have yourself a very good week. Hopefully you don't have to work as hard chasing down the skeeters this week. Any final thoughts, anything that you'd like to say that we've missed out on or anything like that?
No, nothing I could think of, Tom, man. Just enjoy your racing tonight. There's two night races, one in the Nationwide and the IRL, so be some good times.
Good times, sir. I'll say it right, Mr. Cliff Tanner, Radio Speed Talk. Thanks for joining us, sir. We'll talk to you next
week.
Buddy. All right. Cliff Tanner of Radio Speed Talk, new nickname, West Nile Cliff. We'll be right back right here on The Balance. And coming up next, that's right, it's time to meet your makers.
Non-stop acceleration, hooked on supercharged exaggeration. Just a speed junkie on wheels, but that's just me. It's just me.
Wow, did you see that nice set on her?
Yeah, I sure did.
Guys? Hello?
Nothing like a fresh set of rubbers speeding down the backstretch.
Man, you gotta love the smells of racing.
Speed Talk. That's what you'll get with this crew.
Check us out, RadioSpeedTalk.com.
Speed Talk, where you can hear all about all genres of racing. We'll include great interviews and opinions. Catch the gang on your local affiliate. Checks for times and listings.
Check out all there is to know at RadioSpeedTalk.com.
Fast Lane Cycles Incorporated, located at 100 Gasoline Alley Suite D in Indianapolis, specializes in quality performance for your bike. A distributor for all major suppliers, we can do everything from service and motor work to customizations and insurance estimates. Give us a call at 317-247-8088. Fast Lane Cycles Incorporated at 317-247-8088.
Okay, it's time to slow down here on The Balance and meet your makers. Tom talks with Brad and Chris from Tecure, a food anthology. You can visit them on the web at tecurefood.com to find out more about them and this worthy cause. Now here's your host, Tom Marquis.
All right, welcome back to The Balance. Time to slow it down a little bit on a Saturday morning for our regular morning segment of Meet Your Makers, Tecure, a food anthology with Brad and Chris. Well, first of all, Brad, Chris, you guys have been on the road for a little while now. Let me ask you this. Are you getting tired of each other?
Well, Tom, I'm tired of Chris. It's only gotten worse from there, but we're making do just fine. Luckily, we get to hang out with a lot of really interesting people, and it's not just him and I all the time. Sure, Tom, with as much espresso as Brad drinks, it's probably it can be tired.
I understand. Well, I know you guys had some bad weather. We'll get to that here in just a minute. But you guys spent some time out in Cologne, Virginia, at a farm out there, a local harvest farm out there. I believe even the name of it is, I'm not sure, Dayspring Farm out there in Cologne, Virginia, which obviously grows a different variety of vegetables, strawberries, and been doing it for about 22 years. So talk with me about your stop there in Dayspring Farm in Cologne, Virginia.
Yeah, so Dayspring Farm, Charlie Maloney and his wife Miriam, great, great folks, actually an old professor, a mentor of mine at William & Mary, took a sustainable agriculture class with Charlie about 3 or 4 years ago, and great gentleman. He's doing some really, really awesome things and some awesome farming education for college students and older apprentices. He has a pretty diversified operation. He's growing a lot of sweet potatoes, awesome, awesome strawberries. He has a new project where he got given a hoop house to grow some ginger. Has also cut flowers. He does a big CSA project. His main gig recently started doing some farm stands and farmers markets as well.
Yeah, really nice guy. Really bright, has a lot to say. And I just wanted to apologize in advance if it's difficult to hear us. We spent the Saturday morning bright and early with the beekeeper out here in Appalachia because right now we're posted up in Asheville. But we spent the morning in the kind of mountainous region outside of the city where a lot of people are keeping bees. And this gentleman we spent the morning with, John, is really the local bee guru, the expert, if you will. So he got us all suited up, and we went out and played with some bees and looked at some honey, got a chance to taste some, and boy, is that stuff good.
Oh, man, there's nothing better than homemade made honey. The thing is, I just wish I could get to it without getting to the bees. I just don't like bees that much. All right,
yeah.
So you guys are...
We learned that a pound of bees is roughly the size of a grapefruit, Tom.
So a pound of bees does what you cut out there?
A pound of bees is about the size of a grapefruit.
Oh, I see. And how much honey does that yield?
That's a good question. It takes a lot more than just a pound of bees to yield. You're talking about several hundred bees per section of the hive, so thousands in total.
It's a really interesting process. If you were to study it, I think you could have some pretty good luck in your local trivia challenge. There's some fun facts that need to be learned there. But yeah, I think it takes kind of a lifetime to listen to most of that stuff. We only had the morning, but
right.
At least it was the honey.
Right, absolutely. Well, and I know you guys are out there in the mountains in Asheville. I know that well. We drove through that area around Christmas time, and it is foggy, and don't try to do it at nighttime. So you guys, around Durham, North Carolina, obviously home of the Durham Bulls, but also home of a Full Stream Tavern. My kind of talking now, and I saw some pictures on Instagram and so forth about you guys at this brewery. And so talk with me a little bit about what you call a distinctively Southern style beer, which I is even more my language. Anything Southern in beer can be put together, I'm all there. Talk to me about Full Stream Tavern.
Yeah, it's actually Full Steam.
Full Steam. Okay.
All right, it's Full Stream over the bathroom, so you're right too far off. Sean at Full Steam Brewery is doing some awesome beers. He's really keyed in on the local kind of a Carolina food scene, and he's using a lot of local ingredients to brew the beers. He's kind of not too worried about making traditional beer styles. He's really trying to capture the flavor culinary traditions of the Carolinas in his beer. For instance, we tried one called First Frost, in which he is actually having some of his tavern patrons, the people that go to the brewery and buy the beer, sit at the bar. He has them bring in some persimmons from their backyards. I mean, there are a lot of persimmons on these trees. Most people make plenty of pies, plenty of jam, but just have a lot of excess. And you actually can't eat a persimmon until after it falls on the ground. If you pick it before it falls, then you're liable to get some pretty nasty stomach pain. And so he pays them market price. They bring in the persimmons, and he uses those persimmons to brew a beer.
And that beer is delicious, Tom. We actually cracked one open on our way between Durham and here in Asheville. I guess we were by way of Columbia, South Carolina, here towards Asheville. But we stopped off at a waterfall on the way, and we got our weekly shower in, but also had a chance to kind of sit back and relax and crack open that first frost. And boy, was it delicious under those ice cold waters!
Oh, I can only imagine. I can only imagine. And I think that's a pretty nifty pickup truck they've got there, the Full Steam pickup truck.
Yeah, it's an old Dodge. Really, really tiny, tiny pickup. Candy apple red. Looks brand new if it wasn't, several years old. And license plate back there. It says mullet. It kind of gives the idea of the quirky nature of the brewery.
That's right. But business up front, but party in the back.
It looks like the front part of your blue van.
Yeah, Yeah, no, that's exactly right. We wanted to get a picture of these two together. We thought they might hit it off, but
it didn't happen. Well, I know you guys were also, outside of doing your food anthology, you guys thought you'd take some time to be some storm chasers out in Charleston. So talk with me about your storm chasing adventure.
Yeah, so we were heading down the road outside of, I guess, around 27 and 95, that intersection of interstates. And, you know, there was a big wall of rain ahead of us. Sky was looking a little green. We kind of just drove into it as you would think too. It's just a storm. And then that storm started hailing, and you had probably about nickel-sized hail hitting the car. And
couldn't see 5 feet ahead of us.
Everybody was going about 10 miles per hour, 15 miles per hour, hazard lights on, wind buffeting the van. We've got a pretty big target here, so it picks up a lot of that wind. And branches are falling down. And, you know, we rolled out of it, and traffic had pretty much ground to a halt on the opposite side of the interstate. And my phone chirped up at me and said, you know, you have a severe tornado alert. And it brought up a little box there, and sure enough, Old Blue was right in the middle of the tornado watch box. And one did apparently a funnel or touched out at least, and it was eye-opening.
Yeah, it's pretty hairy there for a minute. I know we're used to it there in Indiana, kind of there on the tail end of Tornado Alley, but I think this might have been Chris's first experience with a tornado being a Virginia boy. So yeah, it was pretty nice to see him. Almost see his pants.
I've done a lot of earthquakes, but this is the first tornado.
Well, I will say this much: I'm a storm geek myself. I love storms. Now, I don't want to see anybody killed, die, but you know, I love to see a good tornado. So I would have thoroughly enjoyed your little storm chasing event. Well, I'm glad that you all made it through all of that safely. Now, I guess you're learning how to make bread on bricks, which is pretty fitting, seeing as how we just finished up with the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. Tony Kanaan, kiss the bricks. So talk with me about making bread on bricks. Bread.
That's absolutely right. And this was in an oven this gentleman had built, Dave, and Farm and Sparrow here outside of Asheville. But, you know, Kanaan kissed the yard of bricks, but this was a big oven. This thing was, I mean, for the size of the bakery, it was big. It was probably 3 yards wide and a good 3 deep. And the day we were there, we weren't putting any bread in to be baked that day. We were go ahead and rolling out most of it. But while we were there, there were just logs and logs in the oven, full blaze. It was good 850 degrees in there. And apparently, those ovens are just so well insulated that they keep it the heat for days on end. And so he stoked it for on this day, but he wasn't intending to use it until tomorrow. So that was pretty amazing to me. But it's a really interesting story what he's doing there, because he mills all the grains that they use for his bread there on site, oftentimes using heritage kind of heirloom varietals, things that most people thought went extinct, but they have actually found in the hills and have tried to replant and to try to reseed to encourage people to produce these kind of more hardy, really delicious bread-baking grains. They've actually been kind of kept around and intact but under the radar because they're oftentimes used for moonshine, the corn varieties anyway, that he also mills. So that's kind of an interesting little side story. But, yeah, so he mills all his own grains and turns them fresh right into bread, and it is some of the most delicious stuff you've ever tasted.
So the bread company is just the front for his steel. I get it. I understand. Hey, bring me some samples of moonshine. And that is the, you know, you got to go easy on it because you got to respect the moonshine. But there's nothing better than a nice sip of moonshine. Have you ever had it?
Well, you know, we may or may not have been sent off with a small ball jar of aged moonshine, aged 5 years. So this is the good stuff. I won't tell you from the source of which we got it, but it is. We went ahead and partook, and it's pretty delicious stuff, I must say.
Well, it burns going down, but it does feel good. So just make sure you're not in Old Blue while you're enjoying the moonshine. Now, I know you guys have clocked some miles. How many miles have you clocked on your trip so far since you left Boston?
How many miles did we go, Tom? Sorry, you broke out for a second.
Yeah, I said I know you've clocked some miles since you've lost Boston. How many miles have you guys gone since you've left Boston?
We've gone about 2,500 miles so far since we left Boston. We've got about another 12,500 to go.
Well, I know you guys are trying to raise some money, and they could go to your site there. Is it takirafood.com? How do they find you?
Well, Tom, they can find us at our website, www.takirafood.com. You can also catch us on Twitter or Instagram, which is at takirafood. Instagramming some awesome shots recently. You can see our most recent waterfall shower location. We're not in it, don't worry. And nobody wants to see that. Nope. But you can also find us on Facebook. We do have is on as well. Facebook.com/2purefood. Our Indiegogo campaign did wrap up today, but if people are still interested in chipping in and helping out the anthology, they can do so at our website, which is 2purefood.com/support.
Well, I know you had a go. Did you have a go somewhere around $7,500? How much did you end up with?
I think we got around $3,000 all said and done. We've got a couple things we're working on kind of outside of that campaign, which will be more beer and cheese education events, and they're going to help us out too. So we'll get pretty close, I think, by the end of it.
Yeah, we're working on a pretty big workshop out in Colorado, which is all things pulled together for that. It's going to be a nice, good-sized event, which will help us stay on the road from Colorado down to Texas and back home again.
Well, I hope that you guys have a fun, safe trip. Any final thoughts, anything maybe we missed, anything we didn't talk about that you wanted to talk about on this week's segment?
Maybe the only other thing is that we're couch surfing for the very first time. So while we're here in Asheville, we're actually getting out of the back of Old Blue and spending a couple of days with a stranger in downtown Asheville. So I don't know how many of the listeners here are familiar with the process, but you basically apply. Somebody put the couch online and says that they're willing to take people in, and our gracious host has put us up for a few nights, and we're really excited about that. She's really great. So it's a kind of a neat program that allows you to not spend money on a hotel while at the same time really getting a chance to meet some really interesting folks.
Yep.
Right.
That's great hospitality.
I am very familiar with the couch surfing, and that's a new thing. My conservative nature would be the guy not. I don't trust anybody. So, but that's good. That's good.
If
that you guys,
the beers, they warm up to you real quick, Tom.
I bet that moonshine helps out a lot too.
It actually did.
All right. Well, we're Brad, Chris, and Old Blue on the road out in Asheville, North Carolina. Guys, I appreciate it. I want you guys to have a safe trip and a good day. And if we can be of help to you of any way, let us know. And we're looking forward to catching up with you guys when you get here in June. Any final comments?
I think we're all set on this end, Tom. We're just going to try to make our way down this mountain in one piece.
Okay. All right. That sounds good, guys. And we'll talk to you guys soon. And again, be safe.
All right. Great everything, Tom. We'll talk next week.
All righty. Brad and Chris, Takira, a food anthology. Love talking to those guys. Love talking about their adventures. Well, we're going to take a break. When we get back, we're going to jump more in today's show. Today's consumer spends 1.4 times as many hours using social networking sites than reading and responding to email. Marquee Solutions works with your company to build a solid social strategy. They are with you from start to finish, always there to help you navigate through the complexities of social media. Call Marquee Solutions today, 317-903-8063. That's 317-903-8063. Marquee Solutions. Work with them today.
Hi, I'm Mark Timmons of U.S. Water Systems, a family-owned Indiana company that sells water treatment equipment around the world. But we especially know Indiana water because our world headquarters are right here in Indy. You have bad water in your home or business? Whether you're on city or well water, uswatersystems.com makes it easy to solve your water problems. We offer videos, all sorts of water conditioning equipment, and tech support 365 days a year by certified water specialists. U.S. Water has reverse osmosis systems, water softeners, and salt-free water conditioners from $179. Visit us at uswatersystems.com.
Over the course of history, there have been many great revolutions. The French Revolution, the American Revolution, the Cuban Revolution, and now in 2012, there's a brand new revolution for the Fan Revolution, IndyProSports.com. That's IndyProSports.com. Indy Pro Sports is for the serious Indiana fan who roots for the Colts, the Pacers, the Indians, and so much more. Make sure you check out IndyProSports.com. Be a part of the revolution on Twitter, Pro Indy, and on Facebook, Indy Pro Sports.
Wow, did you see that nice set on her?
Yeah, I sure did.
Guys, hello?
Nothing like a fresh set of rubber speeding down the backstretch.
Man, you gotta love the smells of racing.
Speed Talk. That's what you'll get with this crew.
Check us out, RadioSpeedTalk.com.
Speed Talk, where you can hear all about all genres of racing. We'll include great interviews and opinions. Catch the gang on your local affiliate. Checks for times and listings.
Check out all there is to know at RadioSpeedTalk.com.
Sports. Bart, rides up in the front seat today because he's a good guy at sports.
Ha! I do this every week, guys. Why would I think that finally I would be able to do it any differently? I did not turn on my microphone after a break. I need some sort of electroshock therapy or something like that that tells me to turn on my mic after a break. So I apologize for that. As I was saying, hopefully we'll get some time to talk a little bit about the Pacers. And great season to the Indiana Pacers. Unfortunately, didn't end the way that we'd like for it to end. But we look forward to the Spurs and the Heat. I don't know about you Pacer fans, but I'm rooting for the Spurs, and I think Tim Duncan can get it done. And you know what? We talk about Dennis Rodman, and we always got to repeat what Dennis Rodman says. But Dennis Rodman says he's a better player than LeBron James. That's a debate we'll have to get into another day. Joining us now is a very special guest. Been on our show before and different times, and we enjoy having him on the show with us. But, you know, here recently he made some national news, and we didn't get a chance to talk with him during our racing segment, but I did want to have some time to talk with him, Michael Stancombe of Pepper Racing. Michael, welcome back to The Balance, sir. How you doing?
Great. How are you guys?
Good, and it's good to have you back. And first of all, let me tell you, and we're going to get into the conversation about all of this right here in just a moment, but a scary wreck you had out there in the Gulf in Orange Beach, Alabama, and we'll get into that. But, you know, we've talked with you a few times about the how dangerous your racing is, and in different occasions on this very show, we've talked about the safety precautions in the event of a wreck. So we'll get into that. But you had a very, very scary moment that made national news at ESPN, and I think almost all of the major sporting outlets picked it up. And we're just watching the news, and all of a sudden I'm like, hey, we know that guy. So, Michael, glad you made it out okay, but some scary moments out there in Alabama.
Yeah, it was. Wasn't what I expected, you know. We went out to testing in Orange Beach on Saturday, and, you know, I've raced there. I've won there several times, and, you know, I love the area, and it's notorious for being rough. And being my first time in this 44 MTI shaft-driven cat, like our drive, our boat has Mercury number 6 drives. These actually have DPM drives, which are just straight drives, up shafts out the back of the boat with a rudder system. So I'd never been into a boat with that setup, and we went out testing Saturday, and it was, I would say, four to six with some 8-foot rollers and probably 10, 12-foot holes in the race course, and we ran about 12 miles and said, you know, we better not break this thing before race day. So, you know, we bagged it, put it on the trailer, and prayed that it would calm down, which it did, but it wasn't as calm as I would have liked it. But,
well,
Go
ahead.
It was a wild ride. It's like just from the drop of the green flag, because, see, we do a milling area. It would be like NASCAR running around in circles in turn four. And when the pace car decides to go and throw the green flag, it was a free-for-all to the first turn. So, you know, everybody can imagine NASCAR and IndyCar will do that and then put 5 and 6 foot bumps in the middle of the race course for 100 miles, and I guarantee you most of those guys would be in pain.
Well, and let's talk a little bit about your series. Obviously, you're in the Power Boat Racing Series, and a lot of us, especially, you know, who are familiar with the coastal cities or river cities, and I know you do a lot on the coast and on the Gulf, but they also race, the hydroplanes also race, you know, in various different river outlets. Obviously, we think of the big one down in Madison, the Regatta, and we think about the Thunder down in Evansville. I'm not sure if they still run that. But the powerboat racing, that's kind of what you do. Talk with us a little bit about your series, your team, and what you guys do week in and week out. And really, it's a lot of fun watching those powerboats out on the water. But talk with us a little bit what goes on internally to make a race like that happen.
Yeah, my team consists of me and my father. He drives and I throttle. This year we're laying a little back with our team, so I've been hired and being looked at several other teams for throttling because of my past with Don Z Fountain, Dad and I's Peppers Racing team, and you know, the wins that we've had. So, you know, I've got the ability to run other boats. You know, we travel all over the United States. I was supposed to be in Atlantic City this weekend or Lake of the Ozarks, and of course, we couldn't make it because of the boat. But you know, we travel all over. It's a lot of prep time for about an hour and a half worth of racing. You know, we have to go through the engines, the drives, make sure everything's set up right. You know, just like NASCAR or IndyCar, you just don't throw the thing on a trailer and go to the next race and go. There's setups for each race course, because every town we go to different. You know, Orange Beach, Alabama, yes, it was rough. But then I'll go to Michigan City here in Indiana here in, I'd say, about a month and a half, and it will be rough too. But I'm going to tell you, there is night and day difference between saltwater and freshwater rough. That water in Michigan is hard, and it really takes a toll on your equipment and your body.
Well, let's talk a little bit about that and the different types of water. As I mentioned, one of the most famous powerboat races is the Regatta, which is based right here in Indiana, in southern Indiana, and Madison, Indiana. Talk with us a little bit about the difference between, like, say, the Regatta or the Thunder on the Gulf down at Orange Beach. What's the difference? Do you race in both types, or do you predominantly race in the salt water, or have you ever raced in the Regatta or any races like that? I guess I just want to draw the comparison between the two styles of racing.
Would say take the Indianapolis 500 and put it against the Baja 1000.
That's about the difference of the two. Since, you know, most everybody in the Midwest and most of the country are familiar with motorsports with wheels. You know, the only wheels we have are the propellers on the back. You know, the difference there between the unlimited hydroplane races, which my friend Steve David is the driver for the Miss Madison Oh Boy Oberto boat.
And, oh, Miss Madison, you know, they, and Miss Budweiser boat.
Yeah. No. And well, Budweiser's not around anymore.
Oh, okay.
They dropped their stuff. So, you know, the guys from Qatar are fighting real hard with Steven down at the Regatta, you know, and that's coming up in, what, 3 weeks, I believe, 4th of July weekend, which I'll be in Sarasota, Florida, racing a boat that we decided to go swimming in. but, you know, if you compare the two, the unlimited hydroplanes are really, they run a two-mile course, an oval, strictly an oval, and really smooth water for the most part. You know, it can get rough, but they won't run in anything like we do. I've always wanted to. The funny part of the story was we bought a F1 tunnel boat, which is an 18-foot tunnel with a capsule, and it runs a 2.5 Mercury Racing outboard on the back of it. And I was supposed to go to LaPorte, Indiana last weekend to go hang out with my buddy Tim Siebold, who's been racing, him and his family been racing and actually built the hull that we ended up buying. And I was supposed to go there and hang out with them and possibly do some testing and see how I liked with that. And that's real similar to the unlimited stuff. They run similar type courses. And I got this phone call on Thursday afternoon after I'd already made plans to go to LaPorte for that big race. And so I decided I'd just, go do what I know, and I'm running offshore. In hindsight, being 2020, I kind of wish I would have went to LaPorte, Indiana.
I understand. Let's go back to that wreck out in Orange Beach. Obviously, 1 second, you guys were rocketing at more than 100 miles an hour. The way I understand it, you have a two-man crew. And help me understand this. If I get off track a little bit, I do apologize. Now, did you collide? Walk me through the wreck. Like I said, 1 second you were rocketing down the water at 100 miles an hour, which is incredible anyway. So you have a two-man crew. Now, I know that's a lot of G-forces when you guys start to barrel roll. We look at IndyCar, for example, but nothing like that. You guys are actually wrecking underneath water, which is even more scary. So walk me through what happened that day at Orange Beach.
Well, you know, I'm notorious for getting great starts in a kind of setup Le Mans-type start that we have. And, you know, I took off green, got lined up because a rudder boat doesn't turn like everybody else's. So, you know, we had to plan our lineup and get in the right spot instead of being turned the other direction when they decided to take off. And we mastered that one. And, you know, we had a big, big, heavy boat and kind of the underdog out there. You know, they were allowing us to run. They outlawed the shaft-driven boats, but they allowed us to run this week, that weekend, to see how we would do. And, you know, we're running great. Got to start, been in the first 10, probably third. No, we were fifth. Rounding the turn, came out the back stretch in lap one, and we were hunting down the front two boats rather quickly. And then on lap three, start of lap four, we were right on their tail going into turn one, and WHM boat hooked a pin like they do. They love carving a short course around there. And J.D. Byrider, the boat that was right on his hip, did the same thing and skipped out kind of in third, fourth lane and carved back over. So when we finally got to the pin, which is about 2 seconds, 3 seconds later, I know it looks longer on the film on superboat.com, but it wasn't. Trust me, I was looking at it. I was eating water on
imagine.
The windshield. And our boat, we grabbed the pin, and the boat took a hop and hooked the starboard, the right-hand sponson of the boat, and carved around a little bit. Then it released and hit the other wave and rolled up on the port sponson, and we thought we had it for a second, and, you know, next thing I know, I see the side of the boat underwater and then my canopy under the water. And, you know, it as everybody says, the crash seems so slow. Well, I'm telling you, I could almost, it felt like a 10 minutes as it was going. And we are trained to get out of that, you know, embrace yourself for the impact, and then, you know, grab your air, because we do have air systems in the boat. So if we have to, we have two ways of getting out, the top, which is what you get into the boat, or the $50,000 hatch, which is in the tunnel of the boat. So when you're inverted, you come up and you don't even get wet. So, you know, I got there. We're finally upside down. You know, a little bit of water in there, not a lot. And I released myself and looked over at my driver, Paul Boudreau, and told him to put his hand, you know, motioned for him to put his hands over his head to put it on the lid of the cockpit, and pulled his safety harness for him. So I made sure he got out all right. And we sat in there for a millisecond, and went out through the bottom hatch, and I think they said that was the quickest they've ever seen two people get out of a boat.
Well, Paul, I know, said that you guys were lucky to be alive, and looking at this, as you said, it looks a lot longer, and I'm glad you went into that explanation, because I was curious about the process of that of that emergency hatch plan, and I know Paul's talked about it in different media sources as well, and managed to extract yourself through that emergency hatch. Now, what a lot of people may not realize, you know, this is a very, very expensive maneuver. First of all, your boat had to be towed back to Outcast Marine, where they flipped it back over, and they actually had to have a crane, obviously, to do that, and pump the water out of a flooded cockpit. So there's a lot of steps in recovering from a wreck like that. Talk with me about that and the costs that are involved. How costly is it when something like this happens to a team like you?
Well, you know, best part about it, as we said in all the interviews on ESPN and Fox Sports and everything it was on, you know, our biggest grateful thanks to God was that, you know, Paul and I got out of the boat alive, and that comes from training from our, what we call our angels, our medical safety team. We go over that test in a swimming pool in a light canopy system. And, you know, of course, you can open your eyes, and it's not the impact that you take when you really race, but gives you a feel. You do it over and over again, get used to it. And, you know, I got to really thank Tyler Bass and Sam Jackson from Orange Beach and all their years of training me how to do it. And I was hoping I'd never have to use it, but I did. And I thank God for them that I'm still alive and I got to come home and hug my son. But, you know, we're going to have to, the engines will have to come out of the boat. They'll have to be completely torn down. When we flipped the boat over, as you said, we pumped all the water out of the boat, got it floating, which happened real quickly, and within 30 minutes, we had drained all the oil, all the fuel out of the boat, bathed both engines with diesel fuel, rolled them over, emptied the diesel fuel out, and then put oil back in them and rolled them over to make sure we got all the water we could get out of the engines, and then we have to pluck the engines out, send them to the engine builder, have them completely gone through. They seem to roll over fine, so we might not even have to go through a major rebuild, just some bearing replacements. Then we have all the wiring, all their instruments, trim pumps, everything in the boat needs to be replaced. So it's like complete re-rig.
And I'm sure that that's an incredible cost that is absorbed by somebody, whether it's sponsorship or you guys yourself. It's just unbelievable brush with death that you guys had out there in Orange Beach. Glad you made it out okay, obviously. And if you're like any other racer I've talked to, you're ready to get back in it and brush that off. But talk with me about that. Are you a little jaded? Is there something about you that says, hey, well, you said it yourself, Michael, I got to come home and hug my son. And really, at the end of the day, something more important than doing that. I have a son myself, as we look coming up into Father's Day. But there's something inside you that drives you to get back into that cockpit. And as you talked about, you got a race coming up around the 4th of July that you'll be in Sarasota. But, you know, when you have a wreck like that and you have a brush with death and you come home and you're able to hug your son and you think about Father's Day weekend that we're coming up on, what drives you to do that? Because most of us do something else. So what drives you to get back in the cockpit after a wreck like that, and how do you do it?
Insanity. That's pretty much the way it is.
Well, that
you know,
sums it up.
I literally, you know, right after the crash, I got to the rescue boat and I looked at the rescue diver because I had my phone on me, and a Ziploc baggie in my life jacket, and it was a little damp, so I was letting it dry out, and I said, "You guys need to call my dad right now and just tell him he's been through it in 1998. I almost lost him in a similar crash like that, and he drowned in the boat. And so, you know, it took us about 6 months to get the boat put back together, and, you know, he and I decided that they were going to put this. I told him if I was going to put this thing back together, I was getting in the boat with him and race with him, and he's never going to get wet again. And we've kept that promise pretty much intact for the last 15 years, and you know, till then. So I made sure that they called my father and said, you know, Mike's all right. His phone's wet. He'll be all right. Now get back in the boat. It's something you got to do. You know, every IndyCar driver, you know. Even if they have big, you know, major damages to their body, you know, broken legs and stuff, there's something in us, mm-hmm. and I can't tell you what it is, mm-hmm. that tells us we got to get back in there and beat this, because you have something to prove to yourself and just to prove to yourself that, you know, it was an accident. It didn't happen because you did something wrong. It was just an accident. And essentially, that's all it was. It was, I didn't do anything wrong. Paul didn't do anything wrong. It was an accident. So, you know, you got to get back in there, get that monkey off your back, and
sure,
go at it again. And the easiest way I could say, we're all crazy.
Well, Michael, to quote you in an interview recently, here's what I'm going to give you two quotes. You said, "There's no sport like this in the world. I ain't done. We'll be back." So,
yeah.
absolutely. Well, you know, we're glad that you guys are all safe. And so moving forward, you look forward to Sarasota in July. That'll be your next race. So talk with us about that race. And you mentioned how the different of all the repairs, possibly that's good that you don't have to do as many repairs that you do, but is the race in July contingent on the repair of your boat, or no matter what, you're going to be out there in July in Sarasota racing?
Well, I'm waiting to actually speak to my father. If we can't repair that thing, I'm willing to ask him to pull our boat out of mothballs and slap those engines in it and see if we can go race with it. There's no reason why the boat won't get done. It doesn't. It's a lot of work, but, you know, you have to kind of prepare yourself for that repair. At least there was no structural damage to the boat. You know, the cockpit stayed intact, the Lexan, the escape hatches, everything stayed intact. So there's no major fiberglass work that needs to be done. So, you know, it's mostly mechanical and wiring and stuff, and it's pretty cut and dry how to do that. And, you know, it's going to cost a little bit of money, but I feel we'll be back, and, you know, I got to get back into that boat and show it. You know, it's just a piece of fiberglass. I got to show it to his boss and the rest of the guys that might have some doubt that I'm capable of doing this, but I've proved that time and time. I got nothing to prove to anybody, just to my head. And, you know, we're good at this sport. We've been good at this sport, and we'll make it down there. You know, it's the one race in all the series that I've run over my 25 years of racing offshore and my 35 years of racing boats altogether, but I haven't won yet.
So
it could be the perfect time to come back and get that checkered flag and something, you know, and get both monkeys off my back.
Absolutely, and we'll be rooting for you, and hopefully that happens. Now, just make sure I'm correct on everything when I start naming sponsors. You were in the Lucas Oil racing machine when this happened, correct?
No, I was in the Paul Boudreaux. It wasn't our boat. I was hired to run another boat.
Oh, okay. You're right.
Rick's Collision is that, and, you know, we've got Rick's Collision. There's a couple other, Ashton Boatworks, which is Paul Boudreaux's boat company in Louisiana. And so, you know, they're familiar with rolling this stuff. They usually roll, you know, 150-ton tug boats, but, you know, they know what it takes to do this. And, you know, I have faith in Paul and his guys, and I appreciate the opportunity he gave me. And, you know, all I could do when I got out of the boat was say I'm sorry. I didn't know what happened, how it caused it, watching the videotape. You know, you can make all the assumptions in the world, but I don't think anyone has stopped it. And, you know, my safety guys, Larry, said, well, you finally got wet after 35 years, so I got that out of the way.
Absolutely.
But we'll get it done. You know, Sarasota is a big charitable event, and I look forward to going back down there, and I'm not telling one human being where to watch it on live stream or anything anymore, because we had it on at we own bars here in Indianapolis,
sure,
sports bars, and I had it on all the big screens, and people were watching it, and of course they get to see Mike go for a swim, and, you know, I had a lot of upset people, so they're not allowed to watch anymore.
Well, hey, you know, and I do want to make sure you get the appropriate plugs on our show. I'm familiar with your sports bars and have patronized them myself. Some of the great good places to go watch games here in Indianapolis. I want to make sure you get your plug in for your Peppers sports bars here in Indianapolis. So go ahead.
Well, I appreciate that very much. Yeah, we've got one at 56 and Post Road. It's Peppers Brew Garden and Eatery. And then in Southside in Greenwood, Peppers 2, which is one we opened up about 15 years ago. And, you know, they're great food. You know, everything's handmade. And I appreciate you letting me get the plug out there. And, you know, you can find us on the web at pepperslive.com. And we'll have a new Peppers Racing page up pretty soon. As soon as I finish that up, I do all that myself, too. So we're working on that. And we're back to Dad and I funding it. And I look forward to getting back in a boat with my father, and then whoever else wants to hire me to do it. I just love the sport, and you know, we'll be racing in Michigan City in August, I believe, which is only a 2.5-hour drive, and that is 100, and I think last race there's 125 or 150,000 people on the beach up there. It is insane.
Oh wow, that's, I had no clue that many people came to the powerboat racing. I tell you though, you need I love a good brew, so you can count on the fact that I will get back out there to you. But the thing is, I live on the west side. You know, Avon's a pretty good little location there. I'm just saying, if you was to ever open up a location in Avon. I'm just saying.
we're always looking. Don't worry. We're always looking. You know, we're business people first and racers second. So,
right.
And we're dads first. Dad and I are dads first. I should say that. And then people. So.
Well, we appreciate it, and like I said, I enjoy a good brew, and we'll send you an email, you know, and just kind of talk with you about how we can help you promote your business here more on The Balance as well. We really appreciate you, Michael. You're what I like about you is you're just a normal guy, easy to talk to. Racer, I talk to a lot of racers, especially coming off of the Indianapolis 500. Sometimes race cars and racers, race drivers aren't as easy to talk to as you, and we appreciate you taking time to join us and to talk with us about the situation out there at Orange Beach, Alabama. And certainly we're going to be interested to talk with you more as we get closer to the July there in Sarasota. Is there anything that you'd like to share with us as far as where can people find you, follow you, watch you, anything that we've not talked about? Go ahead.
Well, you know, it's peppersracing.com. It's down right now. We're building a new website because the other one had been up for several years. It had three or four of our different boats on there. So we're going to do a better flash-driven you know, loading videos up, Blogspot on it, and a whole bunch of stuff, pepperslive.com. You know, I really want to thank our Reverend Jim Black, who goes with us on our boat racing everywhere we go. And, you know, he was there at the dock and grabbed me again, prayed with me before the boat, and, you know, was thanking God. And I thank God every day that I'm still here, and, you know, all the rescue guys. And I want to say good luck to all my friends down in Orange Beach, Alabama, or in Lake of the Ozarks this weekend, racing the lakerace.com race down there. And I wish we could have been there, but we all know what happened and know why I'm not. And I'm just spending a nice, fun weekend with my son, and we're going to lay back. But I thank everybody for following us and giving us their business, and my father and Jesus for saving my ass the other day.
Hey, well, you know what? We're right there with you, and we're going to be rooting for you throughout the season, Mike. Michael Stancombe of Peppers Racing coming on with us today and talk with us about a very scary incident down in Alabama. Michael, thank you so much. Good luck to you, and be safe, sir.
Thank you very much. You guys have a good afternoon.
All righty. Michael Stancombe of Peppers Racing. Good to have him on board with us today. I tell you what, we posted a video on there. Scary, scary wreck. And always good to have him come on board and talk with us. Well, we're going to take a quick break. If we get back, we're going to have some final thoughts. Then we're going to be out of here for today. This is The Balance on the Balance Radio Network. My name's Tom Marquis, El Presidente. Stay right there.
Hi, I'm Mark Timmons of U.S. Water Systems, a family-owned Indiana company that sells water treatment equipment around the world. But we especially know Indiana water because our world headquarters are right here in Indy. You have bad water in your home or business? Whether you're on city or well water, uswatersystems.com makes it easy to solve your water problems. We offer videos, all sorts of water conditioning equipment, and tech support 365 days a year by certified water specialists. U.S. Water has reverse osmosis systems, water softeners, and salt-free water conditioners from $179. Visit us at uswatersystems.com.
My minions, welcome back to The Balance. Time to jump right into the jungle. I guess I'm on a one-man rant show today, which is good, which is fine. That gives me 2 minutes, or at least a minute, to really go on. Dennis Rodman, please, brother, shut your mouth. Nobody wants to hear you talk. Washed up diplomat, commie, non-American Dennis Rodman says LeBron James would be average in Michael Jordan's era. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying LeBron James is better than Michael Jordan, but no matter what era you're in, LeBron James is far above average. He single-handedly beat the Pacers in 7 games. In my opinion, if it hadn't been for LeBron James, the Pacers would be in the finals right now. So, unbelievable remarks. And the fact is, what's even more unbelievable, of course, it is what it is. We're spending time talking about it. That's what we do. Dennis Rodman, the lifetime NBA champion, was part of the Chicago Bulls, three-peat in the 1996 and 98. You know, basically he was saying what I've said is that LeBron James is not as good as Michael Jordan. I agree with that. But I don't know. So there's just something about you, Dennis Rodman. When you open your mouth, it just – I just want to tell you to shut up. I want to bitch slap you and tell you to shut up. Dennis Rodman, shut up. Go to your commie nation that you want to support. I'm going to get off my soapbox before I really get myself in trouble today. Well, guys, thanks for joining us. Thanks to West Nile Cliff of Radio Speed Talk, Meet Your Makers, Brad and Chris, Michael Stancombe. Great interview with him. You can check us out on our encore show between 3 and 5 on Indiana Talks. And if you're listening to us on Indiana Talks, welcome. We love our Indiana Talks fans, as well as you can find us on iTunes as well. Well, guys, that's going to do it for me this week. Don't drink and drive. It ain't cool. We'll see you next week. Stay safe.
Join us next week for The Balance. In the meantime, check us out on Twitter, T-Balance, or Facebook, The Balance, or online at www.thebalanceonline.com.